Hey, that's right. We are here this afternoon with the one and only representative Mike Pitts. And I tell you what, it sure is nice to have him in studio. It's been a while since we've had him here. I have been on the road doing a lot of things. I was in Washington, D.C. for immigration radio row, and then we went to the RNC. And so now here we are sitting down with you. How have you been doing this summer, Mike?
I've been doing well. Got to spend a little time with the family, and a little being a very accurate term, and still working in Columbia.
Well, I know you were up in New Hampshire now there. You had a good time up there. We did all see that on Facebook there.
I did go to New Hampshire and did have a good time. Got to see some friends from around the nation that I only get to see twice a year. That's at a mid-year meeting and an annual meeting, and that's always a good trip.
You know, there's a lot of talk about our Second Amendment rights. We did a big push, though, Mike, when we were going to the RNC. It was a way to raise some money to send us to the RNC. It was an expensive undertaking. We did a First Amendment t-shirt. In fact, I'll give you one of these because, you know, I think the Second Amendment is so important. But, you know, if we didn't have the First Amendment, I don't know if we'd really need the Second Amendment, would we, Mike?
Oh, yeah, we would need it. But we need the Second Amendment to make sure that we keep that First Amendment. And you know, people, when you talk to the average person out there, they really don't know what the First Amendment says. They remember freedom of speech, but the First Amendment is the foundation for the rest of the Constitution. Our ability to assemble
That's right.
and gripe about the government, our ability to assemble and protest in a peaceful manner, our ability to choose what religion suits us and how we want to worship, and our ability to have a free press and freedom of speech all comes under the First Amendment.
That's right. That's why we did that, because of freedom of the press. And I reminded everybody back when they wrote this, I think the only thing we did have was the press, a newspaper. And of course, now things are entirely different. It uncovers all the media.
That's correct. And you know, that's something to grapple with in and of itself is at what point is it constitutionally covered? First Amendment, and at what point does it now become yelling fire in a crowded theater because of social media and the internet, the ability to put anything out there with no accountability? Newspapers have accountability.
Right.
The accountability is if people don't believe what they read, they quit buying those newspapers, and newspapers go under. That's why a lot of them are in trouble now, I might say. And radio stations, TV stations, same thing. If people don't believe what you're saying, eventually they're going to change the
The
channel.
channel. That's true. That's true. So, as we look at everything that happened this last year at the state level, there certainly are a lot of issues to talk about. But one that still seems to be a hot topic, which I'm kind of surprised because we got some questions about it, is the flag issue. You know, they said they were going to appropriate money to expand the relic room at the South Carolina State Museum in Columbia. But then there was some talk of it going to Charleston. What can you tell us about where we're at on that and what you feel about the flag?
Well, the expansion was put in place in the or the expansion, the money was put in place, and part of the deal, for lack of a better term, with everyone involved was to put it at the State Museum in the Relic Room. That's where the Relic Room is currently housed, but it's woefully underfunded. They can't even display the flags that they already had prior to this. But there was a committee formed, as you know, to make decisions pertinent to that flag in the relic room on exactly what the structure should be and how the display should be and a recommendation on money back to us. And then last year, a curveball was thrown when Chip Limehouse from Charleston decided he wanted to move the relic room flag and all to Charleston. And that created a problem because many of the African Americans in the General Assembly did not want the flag to go to Charleston because of the Emanuel Nine in that situation. Mm-hmm. I personally don't think it should go to Charleston because Charleston's got enough. The flag should be displayed at the State Museum in the capital, which is Columbia, regardless of what Charleston thinks. And if anything, we should bring the Hunley to Columbia to be displayed at the State Museum and all of that combined. Now, there's a good argument. Chip put up a good argument. I can't ignore that fact that the Civil War started mm-hmm. in Charleston and when cadets from the Citadel fired on Fort Sumter. Actually started before that. It just started when we declared sovereignty and Abraham Lincoln decided to leave federal troops in a new sovereign nation called South Carolina, but that's for history buffs to debate. The argument to put it at Patriots Point and all of the artifacts that we do have mm-hmm. With the Civil War to make that particular part of the display at Patriots Point with the rest of the military museum is a good argument. I just think that Charleston's crowded enough. It's got enough tourist attractions, and we should keep the relic room at the State Museum where it is and expand it.
Okay. So, but at this point, I mean, is that the direction that they're going? I mean, has any movement been, or is it stalled because of this recommendation that it moved to Charleston?
It's not stalled because of that. It was stalled because, like everything else that happens in government, nothing happens quickly, and it's moving slowly. The recommendation didn't get back to us until we were halfway through session last year. And everyone was concentrating on other issues at that point. Roads, DOT, the governor, and
there's a lot of issues.
Some of her temper tantrums, and several other things.
So you were telling me that there are a lot of flags for South Carolina, like the Lawrence Club flag over there. Tell us about that one that aren't even being displayed at the Relic Room. I would think that would be fascinating if there's all these flags that represent South Carolina through history.
They are. It is fascinating to go there and look at those flags, and there are a lot of them there. And I didn't know about them until...
What was that flag from Lawrence?
The flag from Lawrence is the Lawrence Briars. That was the name that the volunteers from Lawrence chose, and they adopted a banner to march to Columbia under to join the Confederacy, and it was the Lawrence Briars. Patrick Dennis is the chief of staff for the Speaker of the House, and he was the first one that was sent over to recon the relic room and
lo and behold, there it was.
And he started seeing all these flags and reported back that we have a ton of heritage artifacts that are not even displayed because the relic room is so tiny to begin with. And that's part of the issue, too, is the debate over how much money to spend to expand the relic room. And I think history is a very important component of our society. If you don't know where you've been, you don't know where you're going.
And you might end up back there again.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Very easily and very quickly. And the Patrick reported back and said he found an interesting artifact. I said, "What's that?" He said, "The flag tells me why you are who you are and how you are. And I said, what is it? He said, it's the Lawrence flag, the Lawrence briars, and that's why you're so prickly. And
I said, little inside humor here, folks.
I don't quite, is that good or bad, yeah, Patrick?
Well, so as far as the flag goes, it's kind of, they've got to decide to actually do it now.
Got to decide how much money to spend on it, and that will be decided this coming year, early in the session, and I anticipate during the budget part of the session, which for the House would be prior to March.
Now, talking about the budget, and of course, then we get into the road issue. The roads got what, $400 million, is that right?
$400 million new dollars this year.
This year. And how did you feel about that settling there?
Well, if you take the scandals out and move them over to the side and just look at the pure issue, our roads are deteriorating, as is a lot of our other infrastructure. Piedmont Tech's buildings, Lander University's buildings, and other things that we have that are falling apart all need money. But the issue with the roads, it's $1 billion a year for a decade needed to catch it up. And part of the reason that we have some of the issues we do is putting Band-Aids on and then having to go back and deal with the same stretch of road in about one-tenth the time we should have been having to deal with it.
So the $400 million?
$400 million won't go very far when you need $1 billion a year to do it. Now, people say straighten out the mess at DOT. That's a cabinet agency, and I would love to see it straightened out. And I think that when the Attorney General indicts four people, and I've got a very strong feeling that that's the tip of the iceberg on the indictments, that you are going to see change.
Do you think, as far as the indictments and what's been happening, is it a question of people putting their hands in the cookie jar for their own benefit, and or is it more trying to make deals to get the money to go where the power part of the state is?
Yes.
Yes? Yeah. That's what I've read. That's what I've read.
I think it's a combination of both. Now, I'm an old cop, so I don't judge stuff completely until I see all the facts in front of me. And I haven't talked to the Attorney General about these indictments, nor the investigation, either one. I know that it's going on. He told me that it was, there was an investigation. That's the limit of my knowledge on it. Until I see all the facts on it, it would be hard to say.
Well, what about the fact that I think it was approved, wasn't it, that it would go under Governor Haley, the Department of Transportation would go under that?
That's correct.
So what about that as far as what is the status and where is that moving as we speak now?
Well, I think if the governor doesn't have a good track record with appointments doing what was necessary. Now, that's not across the board. She's made some very good appointments in some.
Little problem with DOT. Little problem with DOT.
With DOT, with DSS, yes. And a couple of others, she's had some severe problems. But I've got to say, in law enforcement, Mark Keel, the chief of SLED, Jerry Adger, the chief of PPP, probation, pardon, and parole, Alvin Taylor, the director of the Department of Natural Resources, those are three law enforcement agencies that you couldn't find better individuals to be heading them up. But then you see some of the appointments she's made otherwise, and you question it. But not to get off the governor, right. She has the ability to straighten that agency out. And I really think that Christy Hall will want to do the right thing in executive meetings. Christie has indicated that let's clean the platter up, and I think she will do it. But it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be overnight. That web of deceit that created those indictments didn't start and occur in 6 months.
And then there's other members, though, that have to be put into the cabinet for this position.
That's correct.
That's right. And so where is the status on that? Will that have to wait till y'all are back in session? Because doesn't the Senate have to approve who Governor Haley appoints?
That's correct, with advice and consent of the Senate.
So is it kind of at a standstill? Is the old guard still there? I mean, I know Christie's now there as head of DOT, but
well, I expect that the governor is. I don't know. I haven't talked to the governor, but I expect that she's working her way through her appointments. I know the governor's office and the governor have become extremely diligent in their background checks and their research and their criminal history checks and everything else of any appointment that's made, whether it's someone that we appoint locally through the delegation that has to have the governor's signature up to cabinet agency director or cabinet director level positions, that she's putting a lot more time and being a lot more thorough in who gets appointments at any level. So I would suspect, I said all that to say this, I would suspect that she is at this point doing the research to make sure her appointments are good appointments.
Now, one of the other things is, though, on the roads, we have $400 million, and I can remember Governor Haley saying we'd see lots of road cones out there and everything with roads getting done. Is there a lot getting done out there?
I don't see it.
I don't either. That's I thought maybe you'd been traveling more than I had, Mike.
I've been traveling a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't see it. You see some on the interstates, but what you also have to look at is where that early money was designated to go, and that was bridges and major intersections. I-26, commonly known as Malfunction Junction,
right,
is one of the early projects to be done.
A lot of people are saying they'll believe it when they see it. They really don't believe anything's going to be done.
Well, it's got to be done if our state continues to grow. Early project, and that's a billion-dollar project itself.
It's a billion-dollar project. We have $400 million. Is there money coming in from some other source for it?
Well, there would be some money coming in from other source, but like I said in the beginning, not nearly enough to put Band-Aids on. When you straighten DOT up and you get people indicted and serving time and you have corruption cleaned up as best as you can clean corruption up, I still advocate that it's going to take more money to fix our roads, because we've not put any money.
We've actually robbed money from the Department of Transportation pay for other things.
That's correct. From the trust fund. The federal and we can't depend on federal money anymore. You and I talked about this briefly last time I was here. The federal trust fund is broke. So we can't depend on federal money coming down to help us as much as we once could. So we've got to put money into it as a state.
I know that I've noticed that some of the different counties are putting a penny sales tax or a half cent tax for the roads. Is this what we're going to come to? Is counties fixing their own roads, basically?
Well, counties have a portion of the roads. And that's what they're looking at is increasing their amount to put through to add to the C fund money that they have so that they can maintain their roads properly. The problem that you have also is you're going to have counties that can pass that. You're going to have counties that can't, and it's going to be like riding out of South Carolina into North Carolina or Georgia on the interstate that does put money into their roads, and you know as soon as you cross the state line.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people say that. Yeah.
Well, you do. It's simple. If you come, I went to Orlando, take granddaughter to Disney last year, and as soon as you enter Georgia, heading south, on 95, the interstate is up. It widens, and it's smooth, and you travel on it like that from the Georgia line to Orlando. Coming back, you're in a good flow of traffic, riding on a smooth road. You cross into South Carolina at Savannah, and the lane's narrow, traffic slows down, and road rage starts.
I can remember coming from Florida. I used to, years and years and years ago when I was in college, I used to do what they call deadheading, picking up cars for Hertz and driving them.
Know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, I got the opportunity to go to Florida and then drive a car back to North Carolina. And at this point, even the interstate wasn't finished, and it was there in Hardeeville where you had to cut off and then come around, and then you got back up on the interstate. And I can remember driving through South Carolina, that part of South Carolina. I got stopped by a cop who was sitting there with a trap and everything. And
not in Hardeeville.
Yes, yes, right up around there. Yes, I did.
I bet his name was not Matt Dillon.
I have no idea, because I was so shocked and I got stopped. But anyways, and then driving through those back areas, and I went, as God is my witness, I will never live here in South Carolina, and here I am today.
Welcome to South Carolina.
Yeah, exactly. And here we have roads now that we didn't have the interstate then. And now we have an interstate, and it's like driving on the back roads.
Well, the reason is probably since it was built, there's not been much money spent on it. And it's like I said last time I was here, there's no such thing as deferred maintenance.
No,
you either
right.
maintain or you don't.
It's kind of like an air conditioner or anything else. You either fix it or it breaks, and sometimes it breaks and you can't repair it.
Well, there's the old commercial, TV ad on pay me now or pay me later.
Yeah.
And when you pay me later, it's generally a lot more expensive.
Exactly. So, we're getting ready. You'll go back in, January will be the next session, but you're going to be working. Is there any plans to do anything else, or are we just waiting to see if the corruption can be cleaned up, and then that will make more efficiency? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, and I said from the very beginning that I was not opposed to looking at the gas tax, because
Governor Haley is.
I was not opposed to looking at the gas tax because I'm a realist and I know that the money coming in is not enough to fix and maintain 70% of our bridges that are dangerous and our highways combined. Just not. I also know that the longer we wait,
right,
the more it's going to cost because the worse the condition becomes. But I also said at the same time, I did not want to send new money to DOT until we had assurance that any issues we had with inefficiency was taken care of. DOT testified before Senate subcommittees and Senate oversight hearings that, and the House Oversight Committee, that there was no inefficiency at DOT, that DOT was having no issues, and we had private people, engineers and others, that testified before those same committees that there was no problem with DOT, just needed more money to fix it. And I did not buy that.
Mm-hmm.
Had that same discussion with some of our local folks that deal with DOT and was told there's no problem with DOT.
So how did we develop, how did we find that there was a problem, Mike?
Through the investigation.
See, you know, but the thing about this isn't any different than DOT, DSS, the federal government. I think it's just part of a problem is it's too damn big.
I agree. Well, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
And I am about to become a libertarian.
You've had those leanings for many years.
Well,
yes.
I started out with those leanings. But I have come to believe that government can't be fixed. It has to be downsized. It's like a virus. It just keeps growing.
Right.
And it's growing in the wrong areas. It's growing in the wrong direction. If you looked at it like a sociologist would and look at our society as a human body, government is the cancer in that human body. You can't build muscle mass and become efficient because of that cancer that's there. And do we eliminate government? No, we have to have government. The Constitution requires us to have certain aspects of government, but it's limited. If you limit government to what the state and federal constitutions require, we would have plenty of money to take care of the issues at hand. But until we address that and downsize government, we're not. I fight every year to try to put more law enforcement on the road. If I can't get it this year, I'll never get it, because I think anyone that but Bernie Sanders supporters and probably some of Hillary's might understand that our law enforcement's in a war.
Yeah, they are. They are.
They are under attack.
I mean, just look at what happened in Milwaukee the other night. I mean, that's just the latest example.
And we have to give them the proper equipment, and we have to put numbers out there. When
I was at the RNC, I'm just going to interrupt. They were so worried that something was going to happen that they had law enforcement from all over. We saw some law enforcement from Newberry, South Carolina, up there at the RNC. They were on horses from Texas. They were on bikes from California. But you know what? It really created a whole lot of calm in the place, and all the bad things that they were talking about that could happen, we were right there. It didn't happen. Yeah, there were some little stuff, but nothing major, and it was because they were out there in force.
Police presence creates what our society expects, and that is law and order
in the place.
And when people forget that is
a core function,
they forget that is the arm that's put there for protection of the citizenry, then that respect has to be taken, not if it's not given. And what I mean by that is there are thugs out there. There are people out there that are going to do whatever they want to do, and they don't care about the badge or the people behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to deal with those folks, and you can't deal with them with kid gloves. You have to deal with whatever they bring to you. You have to one-up it. And having enough manpower to deal with it is the key issue. I'm going to Columbia this year to try to put more badges on the street in all the phases of state law enforcement. How successful I will be, I don't know.
You know, I think another thing that, how do you feel about the body cameras for law enforcement? Having been a former law enforcement.
It's a two-sided how is it that my friend the senator says it? It's a two-headed sword. It's a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to get a body camera broken. It's easy to get bad equipment. But if you've got good equipment, then a good officer is going to be saved by that body camera.
Sure.
In today's society, I would be the first one to volunteer to wear a body camera. When I was a Greenville police officer, they put four cameras in our cars, and I was one of the four that volunteered immediately in roll call. When they asked for a volunteer, I volunteered for it. And a couple of the other guys told me, "You're crazy. That thing will get you hanged."
Right.
I said, "That's the best friend a good officer can have." And right away, within 2 weeks, it had saved two or three complaints for me that people had made. And I said, "Review the film."
There you go. Yeah. Well, I think that is something that they're going on across the state, and money is being invested in that.
Well, it is, but that's also a problem. And I warned of this from the House floor. There was a mad rush to put body cameras on officers, and the initial request or the initial cost estimate was $40 million. We put 3.2 into it. Sound like a familiar story, right?
Exactly.
And we put it in before the guidelines were put in place by the law enforcement committee that was assigned to tell us
what was needed.
So we spent money ahead or put money ahead. We put the cart out there and didn't even have a horse yet. So across the state, you have many small agencies that went out and bought everything from A to Z, from something that won't stay on your shirt and won't work to some of the best that you could buy. And securing it to the uniform is an issue. If you've got an alligator clip on it, the first scuffle you get into, is when you really need the body camera, it's gone. If you've got it properly secured, you got to have your shirt torn off for it to be there. Now, there were two or three times that my body camera still wouldn't have been any good, but that $40 million, we put five into it at this point. And
is that what we need, $40 million to put body cameras on all the officers?
That's what you needed to start with.
To start with.
You've got to maintain all the footage that the body cameras take. You got to have, there's a storage issue, and several issues with the whole thing. Who gets them first? Who gets them at what level? I will be doing a proviso to direct that this year because of the mad rush of how agencies went out and did a hodgepodge of things. If you had uniformity in what they bought, mm-hmm. you would have got more bang for the buck.
Sure. Could have got it from one supplier and gotten a really good deal.
That's correct.
Yeah. That's part of business 101.
It is, and unfortunately, government seldom follows business 101. But this year, I will put a proviso in the beginning of the budget to direct how that money is spent, and even in more detail. I think the smaller agencies, mm-hmm. the guys that work the road, are the ones that need the cameras, and they need them now.
The Highway Patrol.
Mm-hmm. And see, we were funding local agencies as well. So guys that work the midnight shift need the cameras more than the guy working in the daylight generally, because the hotter calls come in more frequently at night.
Sure.
Bottom line is, those line officers are the ones that need the cameras, and you don't need to be putting a camera on some guy that never leaves the office.
Well, there you go. That's true. Hey, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. If you've got a question for Mike, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We got a lot more to talk about, but if you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are with the one and only Mike Pitts, the prickly Mike Pitts from Lawrence. There you go. Well, that's just kind of an inside joke, the flag that they had there. You know, but I love – flags are just such a neat thing anyways. I mean, not to go back to the flag issue, but flags are just so neat. You know, when you see an American flag, you just swell with pride when you see your American flag and they're playing the national anthem and everything. And the Olympics have been a perfect example of that. Aren't we proud of what's been happening at the Olympics?
I don't know about we, but I have.
Yeah.
Two things, and the women's gymnastics team.
Yeah, Simone, and the whole group, yep.
You take that group, that's what America should be. You've got two African-Americans, you've got two whites, and you've got one Hispanic on there, and they truly support each other. Those kids pray together before an event. They pray for each other when they are actually competing. They are truly a team.
Exactly.
And they work together, they pull for each other, and there's not the infighting that divides and creates conquer. I love that. I loved watching those. The swim team, same way. I loved watching those guys play. And when I graduated boot camp, the national anthem was a lot different after boot camp than before boot camp. I can't hear it now mm-hmm. without having chill bumps on my arms. I know that sounds corny, but it's the truth. If I hear it, especially by a military band or someone singing it without trying to interpret it too much,
right,
I get chill bumps on my arm.
It does.
Tell you a story. When I came from my first leave home mm-hmm. after boot camp, you remember the TV stations used to go off at night. They played the national anthem.
Right.
I can still remember Channel 7, CBS signing off from Hogback Mountain and the national anthem playing.
Right.
Well, my first night back home, I went to sleep in the recliner. And the national anthem started playing, and I scared my sisters.
Jumped up.
Because I jumped to the position of attention from a dead sleep. And, you know, I don't see how you cannot feel that way. If you go to a foreign country and you come back to this country, it's awfully nice to see that flag.
It is nice to see that flag. And, you know, I think the issue of, let's just take immigration. Immigration, the problems that we're having, the black-white situation. I don't remember things. I remember the 60s, but that didn't have anything to do. It had some to do with black and white. It had a lot to do about changing of the generations and everything. But what we're going through is making people afraid to be out there and afraid to have things happen.
Well, the country's gone way too far on political correctness. When the Mecklenburg County schools, for crying out loud, can't call a kid a boy or a girl, the teacher can't call a kid a boy or a girl, there's a damn problem.
There is a problem. That's right.
Political correctness has run amok. We've got a president that declared war on law enforcement from the very beginning of his administration and used his, you know, as much as I disliked Eric Holder, Eric Holder's Justice Department, against the wishes of the president, did not convict officers that did no wrong.
Right.
They investigated, they found the officers that did it right, and they did not convict those officers. They didn't prosecute those officers. The officers that have been prosecuted have been prosecuted by local authorities for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Now, officers like the guy in Charleston that shoots someone in the back six times, I saw the video on that. I saw nothing that made me feel good about that shoot. And I watched the whole video, the video before and after. Nothing about that would pass the smell test. So I think that one's going to be an interesting one when it comes up. But U.S. Justice Department cleared those officers in spite of a president that declared war and asked them to investigate and start prosecuting those officers.
I think we should just touch on a little bit when we have a federal government that lets Hillary Clinton slide. What kind of example is that sending downstream here?
It shows you the corruption, the level of corruption in Washington. Nothing surprises me, but I knew Washington was corrupt. It was a cesspool. But I never dreamed that the depth of corruption in Washington was what it is. When she can lie under oath and it just gets blown off. When she can give secrets to our enemies and it's just blown off. Who wants to be in the military under a commander-in-chief that allows something like Benghazi to happen? Who wants to be a foreign affairs official? Who wants to be working in an embassy under a commander-in-chief that allows something like Benghazi and then lies about it and says it didn't happen to start with, and then blames it on a videotape and makes up a story, and then continues to lie? And if you ask her today, she'd give you the same lie. She lied to the parents of the guys that were killed.
You don't need to get started on that, do you?
No, I do not.
Because you know that, that shows it in a very big way. And you know, the other thing is that I've heard lately, so many countries are now looking at our country and saying, "You told us to be this way, you know, the correct way. And look at your country. You cannot even hold it in check."
I think the only way that we're going to get the corruption out of our government is either term limits or revolution.
Well, Mike Huckabee, remember, he used to have a TV show, and he said kind of jokingly one day that he thought they ought to move Washington maybe to Nashville, to a totally different place, and start over, because the growth and the everything else that's going on there, it just can't be stopped. And if you had to move it, you'd have to work within certain confines and make things work.
Well, I don't think they're capable of it.
Right. That's the point, is that even moving it wouldn't have made a difference, but that perhaps moving it somewhere else and starting over might be a better way to go than to... I don't even know if you can clean it up. It is too big. You know that too big to fail? Yeah, that's kind of what our federal government is. Too big to fail.
I think the engine is already over the cliff. I really do. I hate to say that. I love my country. And it bothers me greatly. But, and I said this more than a couple of years ago on your show, that if Russia can fall apart, our country can too. And I would not rule out that this country at some point separates. Will it be because of a revolution? I don't know. What I do know is, we have people that we're bringing in by the boatloads and the busloads and the plane loads that have no intention whatsoever of assimilating into our society. They want to build their own society, and that's not what this was founded on. And the bozo in charge is pushing that as well.
You know, you're right on that, and it's always been before. We have, you know, people ask about, well, what can you do about immigration? Well, number one, enforce the laws. Number one, enforce the laws. But it used to be when you came into our country that, yes, you might keep your Christmas traditions or your this traditions and this type of thing, but you became part of the fabric of our country. Anymore, we don't ask, we don't require people to become part of the country.
No, and Teddy Roosevelt talked about that. It's actually in the immigration laws that you don't allow people in that have no intention of assimilating into our country.
Exactly.
That's written into the immigration laws. It goes back to what you said earlier. Simply enforce the immigration or the law, period.
Right.
And if it were, it's just like the gun laws. We don't need more gun laws. You simply enforce what's in place now. And the problems go away for the most part. Are you still going to have some deranged individual that goes berserk? Yeah. But we had deranged individuals that used a blooming crock pot to blow people up. So,
well, there you go. You're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. I know, Mike, you are up for re-election here again, yes?
I am.
Why do you keep doing this, Mike Pitts?
Because my granddaughter asked me that, and it's harder and harder for me to give her an answer.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I keep doing it because I still think that I can make a difference. And I can make a difference in Columbia. I can make a difference for my people back home. And that's why I keep doing it right now. And discussion with my good friend Jeff Duncan a couple of weeks ago, same question, and how much longer. And I told him that I had a specific agenda,
mm-hmm.
and when I accomplish that agenda, I'll be ready to quit. And the issue is, Columbia needs new blood. It needs an infusion from time to time. The flip side of that is I've reached a point where, without sounding egotistical, I'm a very powerful individual in Columbia. I can make things happen and get things done. That was weakened somewhat when I lost my counterpart, Billy Odell, because the two of us together made a good team.
And there was a lot of working behind the scenes.
A ton of it. Billy liked to work that way, and I do too.
Right.
I don't like the flash. I don't like to be in front of the camera.
You did a lot of that this last year.
Yeah, I did. Well, sometimes, Heather, you have to drop a bomb.
Yeah, there you go.
But making things really happen, it's much easier to do it and work behind the scenes, put the right people together and make and solve problems. One of the staff members this past week gave me a very good compliment in Columbia. He said, "You are very aggressive and very good at solving problems, and that's what your constituents want. That's what they need, is to get the problem solved."
And we have too many in Columbia, though, that are just for the political showmanship and getting their name out front.
Well, the biggest problem, Ann, is the same thing in Washington and Columbia both, and that's people looking to the next election. They are not worried about getting something done. They're worried about test every issue, everything they say, everything they do is weighed against how's it going to affect my next election.
Yeah.
You know why Trey Gowdy is so effective?
Why?
Because he does not care one whit about going to Washington. Trey Gowdy would be much more happy at home with his family. I know Trey.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
He would be much more happy at home with his family than in Washington. He's not married to Washington. That's what makes him effective. He could care less about getting reelected. If my people my constituents chose to say it's time for you to come home, I wouldn't shed one tear.
Well, it is interesting that our governors, for example, can serve two terms, right? Our president can serve two terms, and yet our representatives and senators, et cetera, can serve until such time as either they decide or the public decides. I have maintained many, many times, though, that as the public is likes the fact that they can pick up that phone and they know the person, and if they've been there for 20 years, so be it, so that we get glazed. And for me, it's great. I'd rather have somebody in office that I can pick up the phone and call them and say, can you come on today? Or I want to know what you think about this, right?
Well, and I understand that there's a positive side and a negative side to term limits.
Right.
The negative side to term limits is institutional knowledge. There's no foundation of it. It goes away. Mm-hmm. The second negative to term limits is bureaucracy will take control if you're not careful with term limits, because they know all I've got to do is wait this guy out.
Right.
I can keep stalling until he's gone or she's gone. And you have a problem when that happens, because 80% of my time or better is spent navigating bureaucracy for my constituents. And being able to, the familiarity that you speak of is a big positive. And people, this is a conservative area of the world, and conservative means resistant to change. So that works well. But I can tell you that you get tired, the energy level drops at a certain level, certain time in office, and especially if you're serving in the House as opposed to the Senate, where you don't have full-time staff.
Not only that, you're constantly running for election, just like in the House of Representatives for the federal government. You're constantly running.
That's correct. Well, that was designed that way. It was designed that way when the Founding Fathers put it in place, and that's why it's called the People's House. They wanted the House of Representatives to be close to the people, and what forces you to do that is
keep running.
You run every 2 years.
On the flip side, you quite often can't get a lot accomplished.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And
are you more concerned about the consequence of your decision that year versus something that goes over 4 or 6 years where the people can look back and say, well, yeah, Mike made that decision, but now looking back on it, I can see it was a good decision, versus that 2 years, well, he did that, I'm not voting him in again.
Well, senators have that luxury.
Yeah.
House members don't.
And the Senate has that luxury of being slow moving.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They call themselves the deliberate body.
Yeah. So deliberate, they don't get much done quite often.
Well, that's become government in general, but I think the size and scope of government has got to be reduced at the federal level and the state level, and it's got to be reduced while looking at the Constitution. What does the Constitution say is the role of government? Now, the other side of the aisle screams and hollers about that, because people dependent on the government vote the other way.
Well, I wish we would be able to. I think people would find, if they ever got out there in the world and started doing for themselves, I think they would find a path that would provide them a lot more satisfaction.
Absolutely. When you accomplish something, that feeling of accomplishment you can't buy with money. The second part of it is when someone gives you something, you don't take the same level of care of it as when you earn it. When I had to start buying my own tires for my car, and I quit spinning my tires when I started off.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I just want to end on this, Mike. You know, since we've got national health care and we've got all these other things going on, I've been thinking about what type of perk we could have. And I was thinking of a national vacation system where we all got vacations. What do you think? I think it would be perfect. A national vacation paid for by the federal government for everybody. A week or 2 weeks.
Well, see, you are on to something here, Ann. Because people that actually work, the less than 50% now that actually work and pay taxes,
yes,
would then get some benefit from the government.
Well, see, I was thinking about that. What do you think, Mike? I mean, you know, maybe I start to put that one out there more, but I've thought about it. I've tested the waters, and people seem to like the idea of a national federal vacation that we have vacation time.
You better be careful. People will start comparing you to me, thinking outside the box and throwing ideas out there. They'll label you as crazy as I am.
Well, they'll probably label me prickly, that's for sure. Hey, Mike Pitts, thanks so much for coming out this afternoon.
I appreciate it. I always enjoy being on your show.
Well, thank you so much. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.